My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She is president of the Galen Institute, one of the most respected healthcare policy firms in the country. She joins us on all sorts of topics related to the seemingly never-ending healthcare debate. She was with us just a couple of weeks ago in reaction to the Supreme Court arguments on the president's healthcare laws. And now she's with us to discuss some of the ongoing aftermath to the president's comments following those oral arguments. And Grace Marie, it's always good to have you with us.
Greg, nice to be with you.
Well, it was kind of a work in process last week for the Obama administration. Last Monday, the president said that the Supreme Court would be making an unprecedented move by unelected judges if it were to basically dare to overturn the individual mandate or the entire law. Eventually, that got walked back to, well, it'd be unprecedented under the Commerce Clause. And then it got walked back even further, especially after the Fifth Circuit, three judges from that court demanding that the Justice Department explain what it thinks the role of the courts is and its response and position on judicial review and so forth. And the story we got at the end of the week, Grace Marie, was that the administration had pretty much gone back to a pretty standard opinion of, well, of course, this administration understands that the courts have the power to review, and that includes congressional resolutions. So it seemed like from most media coverage that this firestorm had kind of been calmed down. But as you looked closer at the response from the Justice Department to the Fifth Circuit, you're not necessarily all that assured.
I'm not. I really think that Holder's letter was really repeating the veiled threat to the Supreme Court that the president issued in much more blatant terms earlier in the week, but he did it in legalistic language with a lot of footnotes and citations, as lawyers do. But it, you know, when I read that, it was absolutely, you know, point by point, the key issues that the court was considering. The first paragraph did say, you know, he couldn't help but admit the obvious, which is, of course, quote, there's a long-established precedent concerning judicial review of the constitutionality of federal legislation, and, of course, the power of the courts to review that constitutionality is beyond dispute. So up front, yes, of course the court can review constitution, as they have, by the way, about 165 times over the history of the country. So he couldn't say other than that. But then he began to go sort of point by point to the key issues that were discussed during the oral arguments before the Supreme Court, talking about the Commerce Clause, talking about the Necessary and Proper Clause, severability, fundamental questions of constitutionality. And that's where I saw in this letter the threats. He says, for example, and this is Holder's letter, the Supreme Court has often acknowledged the appropriateness of reliance on the political branch's policy choices and judgments, which means, of course, that the Congress and the President know best, and the judiciary better not try to overrule its policy decisions. You know, of course, the question is always their constitutionality. And then he talks about the courts accord particular deference when evaluating the appropriateness of means Congress has chosen to exercise its enumerated powers, including the Commerce Clause, and basically saying, well, we're doing this through the Commerce Clause, so hands off. And then he basically says also that this is not merely a polite gesture, it's a deference due to deliberate justice by constitutional majorities of two houses of Congress and an act that's within their delegated power or the necessary and proper power to execute those provisions. So he's touched Commerce Clause, Necessary and Proper, and then he also talks about severability. He said that it would the courts have really tried to not nullify more of a legislature's work than is necessary. So here he's daring them to sever, basically say, okay, if you decide the individual mandate's unconstitutional, then you better not sever it from the rest of it. But then he makes all these other justifications of why Congress should know what it's doing, the courts better keep their hands off of this. I mean, I just saw it as an extension of the threat. And then the final final jab at the end of the letter, this, by the way, the court in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals asked for a letter, single space, of no fewer than 3 pages. Holder's letter was 2 1/3 pages. So even that was sort of in your face with the court, we're going to give you what we want. But then Holder ended it by saying, the president's remarks were fully consistent with the principles described herein. So he's saying, the president knew what he was saying, and he meant it, and to heck with you.
Grace Marie, ultimately, in a couple of months here, we're going to see a court decision that either strikes down all or part of the president's health care law, upholds it all, or we get some convoluted decision that kind of makes nobody happy. Ultimately, we're never going to know whether this sort of media effort did anything in terms of influencing the court, but whether it does or does not, what's the long-term impact of it, do you think?
You know, it's really interesting. There's a new Rasmussen poll out today saying that the court, the public opinion of the courts has increased dramatically, like 15 points just since the oral arguments last 2 weeks ago. And that's, I think, really important because they're saying that they now see that the court is taking this seriously. It's really looking this with its necessary due diligence. And I think they're just not going to be cowed by this. They have to look at the law. And I listened to every word of the 3 days and 6.5 hours of oral argument, and I read the whole transcript, and I just have to tell you, I really hear a lot of questions in the justices' minds about whether or not the Congress really has overstepped its bounds in the Commerce Clause and has said, this is going further than we ever have before in telling people that they must engage in commerce in order for the federal government to regulate it. Always before, people have decided to do something that the Congress then says, well, we're going to regulate that. Here they're saying, no, we're going to require you. And the justices are saying, you know, gee, isn't that a step further than we've ever gone before? And if we do, what is the limiting principle? And the government was never able to answer that. If we say that the Congress can tell people they have to use their private money to purchase a private product that Congress demands, where does it stop? And the government couldn't answer that question. So I think the Congress, I just don't see how on earth the Supreme Court is going to be cowed by the president's remarks. And you do have to wonder, why did he come out swinging like that right after we all know that the court had taken a vote, at least preliminary votes, about what their stand was going to be on the law? You have to wonder, is he really trying to intimidate them and trying to get them to change their votes?
Grace Marie, we'll pretty much have to leave it there. But I remember from our conversation a couple of weeks ago that you were hopeful, but not necessarily putting anything in the bank on this decision. You sound a little bit more optimistic now after reviewing the transcripts, it sounds like. Is that an accurate appraisal?
It is. I think that there is a very real chance that they will overturn at least the individual mandate. And I gave it a 5% chance that they would overturn the whole law. I think there's, you know, maybe a 30, 40% chance, because they were saying, how on earth are we going to do the legislative job of slicing and dicing this legislation apart? So I'm actually pretty optimistic, but really anything can change between now and the end of June.
Well, it certainly can, and we'll be on top of it. Grace Marie, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner is president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading healthcare policy organizations in the country. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.